Thought Bubble Audio.
Hi, welcome to Academy Rewind, the bi-yearly podcast where we talk about Oscars of the years past. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is the man who has not left my side, even though we barely podcast anymore. It's Balmer. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm hungry, and I lost the key to this chain.
Oh, no. You know, I told you that I know your one of your greatest ambitions was to pretend to be Louis XVI and the Man in the Iron Mask, but you didn't actually have to throw away the key when you put on the mask. It's okay.
See, this is what I get for not listening to you, literally ever.
Correct. This is so. What you're saying? What you're saying is that you should listen to me, which means that this podcast now I have the power. This is going to go very well. So anyway. We are here to talk about the year's, our year's best movies, our top tens, and we're going to start with number 10, moving to one. Palmer, I'll give you the floor first. What is your 10th movie of the year? Wait, actually, before you do that, how many movies did you see this year?
So 171 that came out in 2023.
That's amazing. Good for you. I saw 20. Yeah.
Good job. So half of your list is half the movies you saw.
That is correct. And I think it's even technically 19 if I'm looking at this list correctly. I watched a lot of new TV this year. I did not watch a lot of new movies. Not really sure why. Just didn't happen.
So we're just going to change this to Emmy Rewind?
I guess I could, actually, because a lot of the ones that I did watch are... But that would take so long. It's hard enough to do this one. So anyway, let's start with your number 10.
Number 10 was a movie that I saw towards the beginning of the year. We always kind of said, like, it's fudgy as far as, like, when we cut off what counts for the year or not. Mm-hmm. So we had to watch this one for the Oscars this past year. Number 10 is Women Talking. I really, really... enjoyed the Sarah Pauly movie about women talking.
Women Talking was very good. I also enjoyed Women Talking.
You know, I was really happy she won the award for it was for the script, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was done very well. You definitely get Women Talking, but just as it kind of starts to get a little bit long, it knows its length and starts to wrap up. Mm-hmm. But it's very engaging for a very minimalist movie. Like, it's only like two or three.
The movie delivers on its title, which is something that you can't say that all movies do. But this one definitely delivers on its title.
This one and Titanic, really the only two.
They fully deliver on their titles. I agree. I liked Women Talking a lot. I counted it in my 2020, like, I guess I saw it in 23, but I actually I think I counted it in my 22 list because it was for the 22 Oscars. I can't remember. Technically, if that's being the case, because it came out in 22, that's what it is. And I'm only counting movies that came out in 23.
Yeah, but it came out like around the holidays and it's in limited release. So
it's tough. I'm with you. Yeah, truthfully, it's been so long since I watched it that I don't have tons of memory on it. I did, and we've spoken about it on the podcast before, so I'm just going to move on to my number 10, I think. My number 10 was Maestro, which is the Leonard Bernstein movie. Mm-hmm. I quite liked it. I watched two movies back-to-back that filmed in 4:3 ratio, and I was like just drawn back into my childhood, I guess, that way. I really liked it. I didn't. And now again, bear in mind that I only watched 20 movies this year. So like the back half are movies that are just like, they're fine to terrible. Mm. And so, Maestro was kind of that, like the tipping point for me. I was like, I enjoyed that. It was not the most engaging biopic I'd ever seen. And it was not certainly the worst. I liked some of the interview style of it. I thought that Bradley Cooper did a very good job. He was like doing Bernstein, I guess, which I appreciated. I really liked the score was his music, and it was kind of poignant and useful at different times. I really thought at different moments the movie belonged to Carey Mulligan, who, I mean, most movies belong to Carey Mulligan, I think, when she's in them. But it just didn't, like, it didn't set the, I guess it didn't, like, set the TV on fire for me, I guess, by the end of it. I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. The movie, I think, takes for granted that you know about him, which, I mean, I do, so, which was fine. But there was, like, this, like, the missing piece in which I felt like, in terms of just, like, watching the movie, like, why he's amazing, you know? Like, it's just the movie's thesis is almost like, Leonard Bernstein was amazing. Here's this movie about behind the scenes of his life. And then, but, like, the movie really, in my opinion, like, failed to, like, a good biopic, I almost, like, want to know more about them. And at the end, I was like, all right, I did it. But all that to say, I thought it was, like, it's well shot, it's well acted. I like the use of monochrome moving up into color. You know, like, I don't think it did anything, like, terribly wrong. It just didn't do anything, like, super special either.
Yeah, I know when I saw it, I messaged you and said that it was, it just felt like a documentary and not a movie. Which, I mean, can be good or bad. To me, it was... I aired it on the bad side. Mm. I think the best part of this is probably the makeup and Bradley Cooper, you know, doing Bernstein. Carey Mulligan's just always good. So I don't think we'll see it come the Oscars except in maybe makeup and acting. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to get much out of beyond that, because It's good. It's fine. And if you watch it, you're probably at least going to like it, but you probably won't. I said this to you when I saw Ferrari. It doesn't really teach you anything about the person. You're right. Like, you can watch this and then just be like, I still don't have any idea about this person that I just watched this movie about.
Yeah, I have a lot of, I have a lot about his personal life, but I don't necessarily have a lot about his music. And I think that's kind of,
or even the process.
Right. And I think that's, like, an important part. Like I don't know why this is the first one that comes to my head, but, like, Walk the Line for Johnny Cash does a really good job at giving you both. And I just didn't feel that this way. But again, it's he was a composer. He's not really a performer. And so it's, like, it's a different relationship that you would have with him anyway. So, but
yeah.
Yeah. But it was good. I liked it. Yeah. It's number 10. What's your number 9?
Number 9 is a movie on Netflix by acclaimed auteur Zack Snyder. And it is his Star Wars. It was his originally pitched as a Star Wars movie. Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire. I mean, this is lower on the list than I was hoping it was going to be. Mm. But some of that is because I really think my top 10 this year is really strong. Like, I gave it 4 stars. And, you know, everyone's like, you know, it's a Star Wars ripoff. And yes, it originally started life as a Star Wars pitched movie. And then when it was turned down, he kind of changed some things around. And you still have the Star Wars influence, which you're going to get in almost any sort of space opera.
I agree. It's very hard to separate yourself from people separate themselves from Star Wars now.
Right. But one of my favorite things is if you look at this movie, the special effects are gorgeous, because one thing Zack Snyder is really good at is showing you a compelling movie. Visually, he's always on the ball. You know, I think this is a little bit different than, you know, some of his earlier style, but his special effects are on point. They're some of the best special effects I've seen this year, and even the past couple of years. And he did this on a $90 million budget, which means...
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's a $90 million budget, which means you can still make really good high special effects movies for a decent budget, And that's one thing that's coming up a lot nowadays with, like, oh, this movie failed at the box office. Did it really fail, or was the budget just too inflated? Indiana Jones, you know, cost more than every other Indiana Jones movie combined and made about the same amount.
Which, and Indiana, and it was a very good looking movie. Like,
yeah.
But it is like, but it, you could tell it cost a lot of money, you know, just like early on. Like, that's a lot of money on the screen right now.
So, I'm excited for the second one. I jokingly said this is if Dune, you know, was interesting. So, I can't wait for the second one. I hope we get more Anthony Hopkins' robot, because I think he was such a good part of the movie, and it's only, like, very, very small chunk of this movie.
I watched about 20 minutes of it, and I didn't care. That was my take on it.
That's because you don't like good things.
That's not true. I like a lot of good things.
Really? What's your number 9?
It's a good thing, actually. You'll like it. you actually will. You might probably like it. So maybe. So we'll see. I got nothing against Zack Snyder. I didn't love his... we've talked about this. I don't love his take on DC Heroes, but I like his other stuff. You know, like, I like 300, I like Watchmen, I like Dawn of the Dead.
Watchmen is DC.
I mean, the classic pantheon of DC heroes, but you know what I mean? Like, you know, but I like, because Watchmen is good.
Some of those guys are from the Golden Age.
Yeah, so, you know what I mean? So, I don't care that it's, like, I wouldn't call it a Star Wars ripoff, because, like, it's just classic evil empire, whatever. Like, technically, it's just a flat. If you want to call it a ripoff, then it's a Flash Gordon ripoff too, or you know, like all these other things.
I think it's dubbed a Star Wars ripoff by people that are just very anti Zack Snyder.
I agree,
and he has a lot of detractors out there.
They lack the language to talk about things. Like, we talk about this a lot on the podcast, but like, it's. There's a huge difference in the world of art between ripoff and influenced by, and like, it can seem like a thin line to like the unappealing eye, but like, everything is like influenced by something else in the world of art. So like, if Zack Snyder's influenced by Star Wars, that's okay. Star Wars is just a bunch of influences of George Lucas's that are out of date, and so we don't really pay attention to them anymore, but he just pastiched a bunch of stuff that he liked and he put it in a movie, and he made it feel original, which is good. And I guess maybe Rebel Moon doesn't feel original, which is, I guess, more what people are on about, but that didn't really bother me. Well, truthfully, I found Corey Stahl compelling, and then that didn't end super well.
I'm wondering if this feels more original if we're back pre-COVID, before the 47,000 pieces of Star Wars media we've gotten.
If you're just going by
the core 9 movies, and granted, I tapped out after 6, but the core 9 movies, this feels influenced by Star Wars, but nothing is overtly like, well, this is just, you know, ripping off Star Wars.
Right. I don't know. I think people are going to be incredibly disappointed in movies if they're like, oh, here are the people who are rebelling against the Empire or against stories, because that's just what are you going to complain about? The Iliad too, or are you gonna, you know what I mean? Or,
well, about... the Iliad's just a dumb name.
So sure. Well, actually, the Iliad translates to Troy story in English. Like, that's really what the, like, in English, that's the name of the story. So
all right, Pixar, get on this.
Right,
Troy story.
It's Troy story.
Woody, so... Buzz Lightyear, yeah. Rex.
I would watch it. I would watch Pixar's Trojan War movie with Pixar characters. I couldn't get into it, but I think that part of that was just like my taste for things that are super violent have gone down over the past few years. And so, and that, which is going to be interesting when I get to different things on this list. So, like, it's...
Number nine, RoboCop.
Right. So, right, the way... Actually, did watch RoboCop this year. That's funny that you say that. So, but, like, this is the way it's presented. I just, like... It was just loud and bombastic, and I didn't feel it was... It just wasn't for me at this point in my life where I am. But, like, I didn't think it was bad. I just knew that I was just watching it to watch it, which is where I didn't have an interest... I didn't have an interest in doing that this year, so I kind of tapped out of it. Maybe I'll go back because I thought it was really pretty, and I know that some people were like, "What's this fit? You're like, so and so's wearing a tie. This is stupid." But like that, none of that bothers me. Like, create right. whatever movie you want. I just couldn't get into it for me.
Yeah.
All right, my number nine. This I'm telling you is gonna be hilarious when I said like violent movies are like I'm not into them, but. My number nine is Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning Part One, because okay. I unabashedly yeah. love the Mission Impossible movies. They're great.
Absolutely,
they're so fun. Even the bad ones are good. In their own zany way. This wasn't as good as some of like the ones of recent memory. But I enjoyed it. Like everybody's bringing it. The overall threat to the world was kind of meh. Like that was the part that I just like, it was just okay. But I just liked that over the past few years or over these past few movies that he's built like this own, like there are a lot of recurring characters, which normally you wouldn't associate with Mission Impossible. And so it feels really own like its own little world instead of just, you know, Tom Cruise and everybody else. It does actually feel like a nice ensemble cast. And I really liked it. And it didn't set me on fire, like in a way some of the other ones have, but it was fun. And truthfully, fun is sometimes all I'm really looking for. So,
yeah, this was about number 20 on my list. I really enjoyed it. And this is another movie that I've said in Rebel Moon, this, like, the downfall of this movie, as it's quote-unquote deemed a failure, is the bloated budget.
Sure. Yeah, you know, half of that is just the insurance that they have to pay on Tom Cruise, though.
Right. But it was very, you know, it was really interesting. Yeah, you're right. Like, this is probably a middle Mission Impossible for me. My favorite is still the one with Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain.
That's the third one.
Yeah, I think Philip Seymour Hoffman just played a great penguin.
Yeah, he did. It's interesting to me that your favorite one is the third one, even though that was directed by J.J. Abrams. Please discuss.
I know. You know why? Not as much solar flare. Or it's
not a
lens flare.
Not a lot of lens flare. There is there is in there, though. It is in there.
But that being said, you're right. Like, I love how we've taken all these characters that have shown up throughout the pantheon now and kind of intertwine them into this movie. I will say, I think the villain is a lot scarier in my eyes because it just seemed like we're on the cusp of AI now being a real thing. And, you know, we've had Terminator deal in the past and we had this, like, but it's very topical. And this is the kind of AI that's more scary than anything because it's just assidious AI that you don't know is pulling the strings. It's not just a Terminator walking down the street to come and get you.
Right. I don't know. I guess that is in part what I didn't like about it is that I just, even though it's not as realistic, the Terminator coming down the street to get you is just a little bit more fun. Like where this one is like, this makes me feel uncomfortable.
You know? Oh, we're screwed.
Yeah, right. So it's like you almost have to like remove yourself from the like, I know that's probably not what's going to happen. I mean, like sometimes you ask AI simple questions and it's like completely wrong. So
right.
Like, I know like we're fine. Like,
yeah, it hasn't been able to figure out what pictures are a bike yet. So we're good.
Right, exactly. Like, sometimes But sometimes, like, I mean, like, I know this is kind of AI in its own way, but, like, I mean, like, I'll be driving and CarPlay will be like, Palmer, send you a picture. it's a, like, it's a man fishing on a pirate ship or something, and it's like the poster for Godzilla Minus One. And you're like, what?
Right.
Like, how did you even, what? So,
good job, Siri.
Yeah, exactly. So, I know it's quite a ways away, but, yeah, I'm excited for the second part, and I actually, what I think one of the strengths of the movie is whereas, like, clearly, like, Ethan Hunt is on his way out, you know, like, just as, like, he's kind of wrapping up his life kind of thing, in at least...
He's been doing that for, like, four movies.
I know, but I mean, like, but it's a slow wrap-up. But I like the Hayley Atwell, like, in, like, being invited in. Like, I like this, I like the duality of the... like seeing an agent start versus seeing an agent kind of leave, which is the impression that I'm getting. So I'm curious for part two, but
I also really enjoyed the train wreck.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, it's all good. It's like, I mean, yeah. Like, that's what I mean. Like, even though, like, Ghost Protocol is my favorite, but, which is the fourth one, I think. So like, like I said, even at like their meh, it's still quality, and I wouldn't even call it meh. It's like a 4-star movie for me. So, what is your number eight?
My number eight is a small, kind of rom-com, quirky-ish, with a really nice cast of Peter Dinklage, Anne Hathaway, and Marissa Tomei, called She Came to Me.
Oh, I wanted to see this. I forgot it existed. Tell me about it.
So Peter Dinklage plays an opera composer, and his wife is a kind of a germaphobe in the post-COVID world, who is also a psychiatric therapist. What's her name? Marissa Tomei plays a sex addict of a boat captain that ends up having a one-night stand with Peter Dinklage. And stuff kind of goes on from there. Like, he's kind of creatively blocked, trying to come up with this new kind of opera that he's supposed to be doing. He has a one night stand with her because he feels a disconnect from his wife. Anne Hathaway starts really leaning heavily into wanting to join a convent. It is wacky. It's wild. It's very quirky and hard to put into words. Anne Hathaway is great in it. She has one of the funniest scenes that I saw all year. Marissa Tomei is Marissa Tomei, and Peter Dinklage does a really good job of seeing him outside of, you know, Elf or
Game of Thrones. I thought you were going to say Pixels for a hot moment, but there was the Adam Sandler, the Pixels. Adam Sandler movie where all like the video game, the 80s video games are actually like,
oh,
aliens.
Right.
I remember seeing the trailer and I said, ooh, I want to see that. And then sometimes it's hard to explain, but like sometimes when your wife doesn't want to watch something, you just don't watch it. That's kind of like,
That's not hard to explain. You just explained it.
Yeah. But you know, it's hard to explain. I think
it's also written and directed by wife of Daniel Day-Lewis and daughter of Arthur Miller, or granddaughter of Arthur Miller.
Right, Rebecca Miller. That's right. That's cool. Actually,
yeah,
didn't know
Rebecca
that.
Miller.
I did not know that she was related to any of them. That's cool.
You didn't?
No, I did not know
that. That was why I thought they met on The Crucible.
They did. That I knew. I just didn't know that Rebecca Miller, the writer-director, was that person, I guess.
Just thought it was a random happenstance. Eh?
I mean, Miller is not exactly an uncommon name.
Daughter of Arthur Miller.
Daughter. All right. Okay. My number eight is a movie I'm sure you reviled. It is, yep, Asteroid City by Wes Anderson.
Oh, God. That's way down.
I figured that it would be. I really liked it. I wasn't a huge fan of The French Dispatch, so he was a little bit more back to form. It was a little bit more back to form for me. I like what he tackled in, like, kind of like the new frontier space age optimism coupled with the grief. So it's like this looking at the past and trying to let go of the past while also moving forward with space. And it was, you know, cut between, you know, like this meta they were putting on a play, and then he was writing about the play and all. It's you kind of have to watch it to get it. I thought it was really a little slow to start, and it did pick up for me once I kind of figured it all out and where it was going. But like I said, I also only saw 20 movies this year, so truthfully, if I saw more, it might not have been on the list. It's hard to, for me, it's hard to tap into what he did with Grand Budapest again, but again, but I liked it. I think a lot of movies on my list, at least kind of from here on out, it was one of those, like, I had to really, like, I thought about it more, and the more I thought about it, the more I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of list. Not all of them. I wouldn't say that for my top three, I would say. You know, sometimes, like, you know, like, you're like, I really like that. And then, like, an hour later, or maybe, like, a couple days later, and you're like, did I really like that? No, I didn't. Like, it made me angry or sad or, you know, like, whatever. But Asteroid City was one that improved in quality the more I kind of put the story and all the pieces together in my head. So, anyway.
Yeah, if I had only saw 11 movies last year, it would have been in my top 10.
There you go. Ooh, what would have been in 11?
What would have just missed out? Alone at Night.
Which one was that?
Which is a movie nobody's heard of.
You know, I agree. It's true.
And not even one that I remember. So
there you go. That's why it was 11. Excellent.
Yeah.
Your number 7.
My number 7 is Megan.
Oh, I wanted to see. Yeah, see, that's another. See, that's the thing. Like, I just, like, movies get said, and you even suggested it to me, and I ran out of time.
It came out in January of last year, man.
Yeah, I ran out of time. Yeah.
Just, you know, it's an original horror movie about a killer doll. You know, it straddles the line between funny, absurd, and scary, and it does so very well, and I can't wait for the sequel. You know, the doll / robot acting from the little girl who played Megan done really well. I believe they actually did use some robotics for some of it.
I have a serious question about Megan.
Yeah.
The number 3 is the E in the title, but this is not a third film, so what is that about? Like, normally that's the cute, like, you know, we're doing the third movie, so let's put the number in as one of the letters. It's going to be great.
Right.
But this is the first movie, so what is she, like, the third edition or something like that? Like, what's the...
Sure, let's go with that.
Great. Okay, good. Yeah. I'm so glad we solved that mystery.
That actually sounds about right. I honestly don't remember.
Oh, okay,
but
cool.
Yeah, that does sound relatively right.
Cool. Excellent. Anything else you want to say about Megan?
No, we talked about it last year because this was Lisa's number 1.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot about that. Okay, my number 7 is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. I quite liked it. Did you see it? I don't want to, like, how much we get into this. I quite liked it. I like the first one. I don't like the second one at all, and I think the Christmas special that he did is the worst thing the MCU's ever done. And so, like, I was quite surprised by how much I enjoyed Volume 3. I liked, like, thematically what it was going for, like, the very nature of, like being a god, or, like, what does it take to create something, and why is life important? And then they had this whole Noah's Ark thing going on at a different point, and I just kind of liked what it was. I liked the questions that it was raising, and, I mean, it was wearing them on its sleeve. It wasn't like a, wow, I really had to think about it to, like, get the message, but that's really not the purpose of it. But I thought that it's very hard to fulfill, like, make sure that every piece of an ensemble cast is well served in their, like, final, like, in their final story, that they all have a significant purpose and that they all have something to do, and that the audience can be satisfied with what they have to do in conjunction with their characters and everything. And so nothing really felt out of place. And I just thought it was, like, pretty tightly woven that way. And so that is why it is my number 7.
So I agree The second one was the worst one. This one is still not good for me. I feel like it's just too all over the place with the emotions that it wants to go through. Like, it's just tonally, it goes back and forth too much for my taste.
I can understand that. I think that's why actually a lot of people, I know a lot of people didn't like it. I think because like there is no, like there, or there's barely any like emotion in the first one other than like, this is a comedy or an action comedy.
Right.
And the second one has a tiny bit of it at the end. But it, truthfully, the first one just felt like a complete retreading of the second one felt like a retread of the first one, and like the story that it was
only amped up to 11.
I agree. Yeah. And I just didn't do it for me. And this one felt like we're actually doing something different with these characters. And instead of them just being like joke-o-meters, they like were three-dimensional people that like obviously still existed in this like hyper like comedic space world, like where it's not to be taken too seriously, but like I just like that.
I think he went, and maybe I don't know if this is because I don't give him much credit for thinking, but I'm wondering if he took the criticism with number two, which was, you know, you took everything that was good about the first one and just ramped it up way too much, and it became, you know, it was overdone. So he went in the complete opposite direction with this kind of serious, really like sad story for the most part, which for me, it just didn't fit the characters that we've seen the past two movies. So like you want characters to grow and you want stuff to evolve. But I think there was no real middle shading to kind of set you up for this.
I can get behind that there was no middle shading. That I agree with. Maybe except for Peter, because Peter's always the one that has like a little bit, I mean, like his story starts sad. So, or, you know, with some kind of like three-dimensionalness, I guess. So I can see that, and I understand why people like didn't dig it that way, but yeah, I really thought it was, I thought it was quite strong. So in terms of, I think also like a lot of the other MCU movies surrounding it were like really like not good or like at least mediocre at best. And so I think like just set against other MCU movies, it felt like, oh, thank goodness. Like they like still can make something that I enjoy. So, which is not always how I felt over the last couple of years. So, anyways, that was my number seven. Your number six.
My number six is actually a live pro shot staging of a Broadway show that I just saw very recently called Waitress the Musical.
Oh, you liked it that much, did you?
I really enjoyed it. The songs are very poppy, are very memorable to certain extents. Like there's a couple of forgettable moments, but the core song will get stuck in your head, and it has been in mine for a couple days. Starring Sarah Bareilles, who is just has the voice of an angel. She was Mary Magdalene in the TV special of Jesus Christ Superstar a couple years ago.
I saw her in concert. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's what threw me off, because I thought you saw this.
No, I did not.
Prior to it going to Broadway, but then I remembered that it was just her in concert that you saw.
Mm-hmm.
This was based off a movie about a woman who works at a pie shop. She's in kind of a loveless marriage with a not-so-nice husband. She meets a doctor because she becomes pregnant, and she kind of has an affair with the doctor while she's trying to get out. Like, she's trying to get out of this loveless marriage, or get the courage up to leave this loveless marriage while she's pregnant. You know, she's still trying to figure out what her life is, where her life is supposed to go. And the kind of the MacGuffin is she's working towards trying to enter this pie contest because she's really good at making pies. Mm-hmm. Never gets there. We never see the pie contest. Stuff gets resolved beforehand. But it's done really good. The original movie was with Carrie Russell.
Yes, I remember the original movie because when you said the thing about the pies, I'm like, that's so familiar in my brain, but I couldn't place it exactly because I've not heard the music to this. Like, I don't really know anything about it except mm-hmm. that it was mounted in Boston before it went to Broadway.
Yes. Yeah, it was done at the American Repertory Theater where we saw
1776.
And then this coming year, they're doing The Great Gatsby.
Really?
By Florence and the Machine.
That's a combination I wasn't expecting.
Yep.
I'm curious. Very curious.
Yeah.
Good. Very good. My number six is... lost my page. My number six is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. I quite enjoyed the first one. I think it was a little overhyped, the first one, but I really liked the second one. It was not like I didn't go in with any kind of expectation, or I didn't watch any of the trailers or anything. I just like Spider-Man enough to see Spider-Man movies. That was like enough for me. I don't really need to see the trailer to sell me on going to see a Spider-Man movie, at least with a Spider-Man in it. You know, I have yet to see Morbius. I know. What kind of fan am I? But I really liked it. I thought it was strong. I thought the whole thing was strong. It's visually, they play up the multiverse part in this in so much that like they get to play with, okay, it's not just the multiverse, but it's animation. So let's do something like stupid and interesting. So like there's like the Da Vinci verse where like everybody looks like a Da Vinci painting or a Da Vinci drawing. And so like, I just like that you can do something like that in animation that you can't do well in live action, because like live action multiverses, these are actors that you remember from 10 to 20 years ago. Let's get them back. But here you can do something like where anything is possible. And I just liked that ultimate possibility of it. And I think when movies are like one or two parters and the movie ends and I'm not like, I don't really care when the movie ends and I'm like, oh, I would like the next one right now, please. Then I think that it has done itself a good job. So, and I know you don't like the animation to these movies.
Oh, I hate the animation.
Why don't you like it?
I don't know. It just, it's too loud and obnoxious in my eyes.
Hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. It's like in some ways it's kind of like in some ways it's kind of like the violence in Rebel Moon for me, where you're just like, this is too much. I don't care. Like you know, like maybe that's just because you're getting older, Palmer. Do you think it has anything to do with that? Where you're like, it's too flashy. I don't care. I just need some British people walking through doors. Like that's all I can handle right now.
No. No, because I would hate that even more.
Mm.
And then aside from that, my biggest complaint for this one was I knew going into it that it was a movie split up into two parts.
Mm-hmm.
But there's right ways and wrong ways to do this. The right way is you have a story arc that's taking place over a couple movies, but you still get what feels like a complete movie in each part. This doesn't give you that. Like, this just kind of ends. And yeah, it's like, all right, see you next time. And you just feel very, like, I just felt very unfulfilled that I got absolutely no kind of resolution for anything.
I agree and disagree. I like, on principle, I think, like, there's a difference between a cliffhanger and one that is clearly part one, part two. I think those are two different things, right? Like, because a part one, it is only half or a third or a fourth or whatever of the story, meaning that you like, so it is not a complete story, and you have to know that going in, as opposed to just a cliffhanger, like, I don't know, like Empire Strikes Back or Dead Pirates, Dead Man's Chest or something like that, where that's like, that's a complete story that ends on a cliffhanger.
Right, but I would even argue something like, say, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah.
That was one book, and they split it into two movies. I still feel like you got a complete story out of the first one. You still had the thing of, like, they still have to fight Voldemort. They still have to do other stuff because there's stuff going on in the background that isn't resolved. But they had a clear objective of what they were doing in that movie, and they completed that.
Yes. I don't know. I've not... That one's hard for me because I knew the whole, like, I knew the whole story before I saw each one, so it's not like, I knew what was going to come in the next part, so I wasn't like, oh, right. No, a cliffhanger. Like, it was more like, oh, that's where you decided to end it. Like, that's interesting. I don't know if that one, but that one doesn't really, it resolves some things within the story, but not all things. But I guess that is also the same for the Pirates Dead Man's Chest one. It doesn't resolve everything.
Right, and I don't need it to resolve everything. I just need it to find to like resolve something, resolve like a there, little bit.
I do think there is very little resolved in the entire movie. I think that's I will give you that, but I just didn't. I don't think I really thought about it as I was watching it. Maybe I'll feel different if I ever go back to it. But maybe. I'm surprised that you. I guess that maybe I shouldn't be surprised that you watched it because you're going to watch all the movies in the entire world every year. But, like, you didn't really like the first one, so, like, why bother to watch this one?
Yeah, it was something to watch at the store.
Oh, that makes sense.
Like, that's a lot of these. Like, you know, I've watched so many because I can watch one or two a day at work while I'm doing other stuff. So, typically, you just watch anything that's available at that point.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
What is your number five? We're in the top five. What is your number five?
Number five is a horror comedy based on the Dracula mythos, and it is called Renfield.
Oh, yes, that's another one I actually wanted to get to, and I hear it was quite violent, and again, not in the mood for super violent, so I just couldn't muster up the energy, I think, to watch it. That's how I
don't know if I would call it super violent. There's like one violent scene in the movie.
Fascinating.
Maybe two, but still, Nicolas Cage does a great job as Dracula. I was looking forward to this from the first time we saw our trailer, and then I kind of got worried because he was like, by the way, don't go based on the trailer because I'm not really in a lot of it. And then when I saw it, he was in a lot more than it sounded like he even thought he was in it. Like, he plays a great over the top Dracula for a modern comedy because, you know, it just looks like he's out of place. Like he looks like he's acting in a completely different movie because that's what Nicolas Cage does.
Yeah. But I guess if they like ran with that idea, like that's what he was supposed to do and be.
Oh yeah. No, absolutely. Like, and it works. It works phenomenally well. You have Nicholas Holt as Renfield. I think, you know, he does a good job. Awkwafina, who I absolutely adore, plays the cop that kind of falls for Renfield. And we get a different Renfield than we're used to. Like, we're used to the Renfield kind of like very mouse-ish inside the sanatorium in Bram Stoker's Dracula. This one, you know, he's still kind of mouse-ish because he's still under Dracula's control. But he has, like, we see him, like, have the abilities of Dracula to an extent, which helps him, which he uses to kind of help people, to kind of offset bringing people in for Dracula to snack on.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'll get to it one day. It's the guy who directed Mortal Kombat, right? Did I make that up?
Yeah, you definitely made that up. This is not Paul Thomas Anderson. This is not.
I didn't think it was Paul Thomas Anderson.
Paul W. S. Anderson, who's married to Mila Jovovich.
Really?
Yeah, that's how come they did all of the Resident Evils together.
Renfield was directed by Chris McKay.
Yep.
Who
did Lego Batman? So you were way off.
I was way off. I did not like Lego Batman.
What? You loved Lego Batman.
I hated
Lego Batman.
I did not like Lego Batman. Mm-mm.
I don't think you remember what Lego Batman was.
No, I remember, and I did not like it. It overstayed its... It has one great joke, and it overstayed its welcome. That's how I felt about Lego Batman. But it wasn't my demographic.
I mean, that is true.
What was your... What was the one great joke for you in Lego Batman?
Oh, God, I don't even remember.
Hey, I'm Richard, but the kids call me Dick. Yeah, kids can be mean, or kids can be cruel.
Oh, right, such a good joke.
Yeah, it's so good. All right, my number five is Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves. This movie was great, and I will accept no other answer than this movie was great. It was super fun. It felt like playing D&D with your friends, where things went horribly wrong and horribly right, and there was always one person there to mess it up. And it had dungeons and a dragon, a chubby dragon, mind you, which was great.
It's supposed to have dragons. It's supposed to have more than one.
One of them is metaphor. It's a metaphor. There's always one the dungeon dragons and one are the dragon. Ones the others are the metaphors. The prison you have to escape from within yourself, and then the dragon you must unleash. Those are the two. Those are the things. The only detractor for this I just kind of rolled my eyes at, I guess, is that it's just a big, like, light in the sky at the end kind of thing. Like, another world of the big light in the sky and it's going to destroy things. I'm like, I feel like we could have done better than that. Like, I'm past big lights in the sky as a thing that's going to destroy everything. And so it's just kind of an overdone trope for action movies of all kinds now. And so I just wasn't taken with that. But the rest of it I loved. The designs... like practical effects, the cast, like all of it. It was great. And I want another one, and I don't think that's going to happen.
I thought they said they were coming out with one.
I hope they do. Chris Pine said that he thinks that it will happen, but I think one of the writers or the director or something was like, we would like to, but we have to figure out how to make it for a lot cheaper because this was an expensive movie that did not make a lot of money.
Weird. It was fine. I thought it was cute enough. I really liked Michelle Rodriguez and most of the cast. I'm over Chris Pine a lot.
How dare you say that? He's the best of the Chris's.
Mm. No. Mm, no.
Could be Evans. No, it's Pine.
It's definitely Evans. Evans hasn't like really overstayed his welcome.
That's true. Working actors want to work, so I can't blame them for working.
Well, it's not that. It's like Pine and Pratt are just playing the same people, and I just imagine it's just them playing themselves.
I think this is a default character for Pine. Like in a lot of ways, but I've seen a lot of stuff where he doesn't play this character. So like,
and those I'm typically a little bit nicer to, although I saw one where he played like a different character and the movie just wasn't good for many other reasons, not him, but you're right. Like I hate this default Chris Pine because it feels like it does. Like my biggest thing is it just doesn't feel like he's acting and it's not a person that I would want to hang out with.
I think it's more, it's not that he's not acting. It's just more that it's like, it's the comfy role. It's kind of like, in some ways, it's like when Matthew McConaughey was in just like a lot of romantic comedies, right? Because it was like easy and comfy. It's like, it's a solid paycheck in some ways. Like, we need you to do the thing that you're good at. Can you come do it? And you're like, all right. You know, like, I don't begrudge Chuck Norris for like, doing karate in every movie that he was in, right? This is what Chuck Norris is good at. I'm going to walk through this movie and kill a lot of people and look cool while doing it. And then I'm going to do that on TV. And that's it. You know, so like... But
I've literally only seen one Chuck Norris movie.
But he did exactly what I just said, didn't it? Unless you count Dodgeball, which he just put his thumb up in the air.
Oh, all right. So I've seen two Chuck Norris movies. Dodgeball and Sidekicks, in which he played a karate teacher. So he didn't really do much karate. He was more teaching.
It was implied that he knew how to do it, though, because he was a teacher. Kind of, yeah. And that's what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really liked it. It's actually one of the only movies from this year that I want to revisit. I mean, that's true, half and half. But I like, there are some movies, like you, a lot of movies that you just watch and you're like, I will never watch that again. For either because it disturbed you or it wasn't good or, you know, like for whatever reason. But Dungeons and Dragons is one that I like, I actually want to watch again, which doesn't happen very often for me anymore. I saw it once in theater. Actually, my wife and I watched it at home, and I like want to watch it again. It's been a couple of months, and I wouldn't mind another viewing. And that,
I mean, I can see that because, see, the thing is, when you watch as many movies as I have, you don't really have time to go back and rewatch stuff.
Sure.
So if a movie like made me want to actually take the time to go back and forego watching something new to rewatch it.
That's good, yeah. Which means that did its job for me then. Like, you know, like, not just that, like, because not every movie is worth rewatching. Some movies are hard to watch, right? They're difficult viewing material. And so, you don't, like, I don't, like, Schindler's List is an amazing film. I can't wait to watch it every year. Like, what? No. You know, it's not something that begs you to return to have
fun. It's funny. Like, I return to Schindler's List every couple of years, not every year,
right. Every couple of years, you need to remind yourself.
But, right. You get
yeah, but that's not like A Clockwork Orange where you're like, I saw it once, shame on me.
And never again. Yeah.
Never again. <No. laughs> I saw it twice, shame on me again. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of all the movies this year, I think I've only seen one more than once.
Have we gone through that? Is it in your top 10?
Yeah.
Have we gone through it yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right, then let's go to your number four then.
Number four is a movie based on a true story of a woman who got the longest prison sentence for leaking information. And the movie is called Reality, and it is based on a woman by the name of Reality Winner, which is her actual name.
That shouldn't be a thing. But
she leaked NSA files to a newspaper on Russia trying to hack the 2016 election.
Wow. The first comment on Letterboxd is, I can't believe her real name, her name is actually Reality Winner.
Yeah, no, it's great. So the way this movie is done is it's kind of a TikTok in the sense of the script is actually taken from the FBI's audio recordings of her interview.
That's fascinating.
And this is when they show up to her house to kind of execute the search warrants and do like the preliminary interrogation for the most part. Sydney Sweeney is the one who plays Reality Winner. She does such a great job she does a great job of making you feel like this is really happening to her. Like, she's very panicked at times. She's very composed at times. She's also like, there's times where like, she's just worried about her dog, making sure her dog doesn't get out of the house while they're searching. And it's something like, I could see being in this very scary situation that you just randomly, like, you're just fixated on this one thing that you can control, because you can't control a lot. I would love to see a movie that takes a broader look at her story, because the more you delve into her story, the more you see, like, she was kind of screwed over by the journalist she leaked the information to. Also, FBI didn't give her Miranda rights.
Fascinating.
Yeah. But she works at the NSA. She comes across a document that says, you know, or she comes across a thing about Russia potentially try to interfere in the 2016 election by sending out phishing emails to get voter information. They tried hacking, you know, they tried hacking voting machines. It does not tell you that any of this actually worked. It, you know, they didn't actually hack voting machines and change votes. They didn't. They did try to influence the election from outside sources, you know, through various, you know, false.
Is she
false
still in
news
prison?
Campaigns.
Well, you said she has the longest prison
sentence.
Out.
She got out last year, so she was. This was
2017
ish is when she was arrested, and then she finally, I think she pled guilty or it got resolved in 2019, and she got sentenced to 5 years. So she got out last year, I believe, or she got out in 2022.
That's
because 5 years from like 2017, because they take it from when she was initially arrested. I believe she spent that time in jail.
Wow.
But yeah, it's very good. It's very gripping and compelling. Like it is kind of nerve wracking because, you know, this woman is just being interrogated by two FBI people with no real help around her.
That's cool.
So
that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, so my number four, I know you said that we're not supposed to talk about it, but my number four is Salt.
No, Bay. No. Why would you do this to me?
We're going to talk about it. You have to talk about it because it was my number four. So remember what I said, that there was a few movies on this list that the more I thought about it, the more I liked it. And Saltburn was one of them.
No.
It is not the greatest movie I've ever seen. It is certainly
That's
one
right.
of the most compelling movies I've ever seen. It is a, I would call it a quite a like literary movie. It's full of wonderful symbolism that it does not necessarily wear on its sleeve. Like you have to really think about it. It makes a really twisty statement about class, but not in the way that you would expect it to. It's just a really good riff. Now, there are, without spoiling anything, there are three key scenes in this movie that I could have absolutely done without, that did not need to be in this movie. Well, I guess in some ways they did, because they showcase the dementedness of its main character, which is necessary when you get to the end, because it's not really so much a victory as more of sadness, like, you know, not a, like a condemnation of some kind. But it's hard to talk about without spoiling anything, but to give you a little bit more like context for why I liked it. So, for people first time joining or have forgotten, that I'm an English teacher and professor. It's so like I kind of watch some things I watch with the English teacher brain, and some things I do not. And this one I did, and I think that's why I really liked it, because I like clicked off like, oh, you're, you know, there's irony here and there's intertextuality here, and this is like, oh, like you're doing a thing with Midsummer Night's Dream, but you're also doing a thing with the Labyrinth and the Minotaur, and you're also doing a thing with what is vampires and communion and like all this different stuff that like you would read into as kind of like a, you know, like if something like is worth your time or if it's just fluff. And this one was not fluffy. Now, like A Clockwork Orange, this is a movie that is in highly uncomfortable. It is not something I would consider entertainment. It is something that I would consider thought-provoking and interesting, and like it makes my top five because it like made me sit up in my seat and think, and unlike my number five, which is just pure popcorn, and I think that's why I liked it so much. Why do you hate it, Palmer?
It made me sit up in my chair and think, why do I watch movies?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, like, you're kind of like, now, if your viewing experience was anything like mine, you're like watching it and you're like, okay, I'm watching a movie. I'm watching a movie. I'm watching a movie. I'm watching a movie. holy moly, what am I watching? I'm watching a movie. I'm watching a movie. I'm watching a movie. Holy moly. Like, every time you, like, think it, like, you can, like, bring yourself to, like, watch more, it, like, does something, and you're like, no.
Like, yeah. I don't know. It just, I mean, we already know, like, I don't typically don't, like movies.
You don't like movies that where the protagonist is a terrible person.
Right. Yeah. And that's one thing. And it's not even like, everybody's terrible.
No, I think that's actually liked about the movie. So, like, I'm sorry for people who have not seen it. I'm going to spoil part of it for you. Is that, like, at least in very general terms, the rich people in this movie are not great people, but they're not, like, the worst. They don't really deserve what has, like,
no,
come
they don't
their
really
way.
Do anything.
No, they don't. And I think that's, like, part of, like that's part of the statement of the, like, that's part of the messed upness of the its main character in a lot of ways, or just, like, a different statement than, like, instead of it just being, like, a general class war, like, oh, these people are terrible, and, like, this guy kind of comes in and, like, usurps their power, I'll say, without spoiling anything. But, like, they don't really deserve what happens to them apart from the fact that they are rich, but just because you're rich doesn't mean you deserve everything that happens to them.
So, fun fact, Lisa sent me a link to a YouTube video in her Discord about this movie, because she really enjoyed it.
That's why I like Lisa.
And one of the reasons why I've hated this movie even more since watching it is because, and this is why I don't like these types of movies. Like, I don't like Clockwork Orange because people get the wrong message from it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and we see people dressing up as the guy from the Clockwork Orange all the time because they don't grasp, like, what the movie actually is. And this is another instance of it where people, for some reason, think in their minds that Emerald Fennell, who wrote and directed this movie, this is a Eat the Rich story.
No,
and it's not.
It's not. It's really not. That's the worst takeaway from watching this movie.
Right, because the rich people in this, are they bad people? Maybe. We don't see them do anything bad. Are they eccentric? Sure. But they don't deserve anything that's happening to them.
Nope.
They didn't cause any sort of, like, they didn't cause this person any pain. We haven't seen them cause really anybody any pain.
Nope.
So it's not like it's like, ah, I'm getting you back for what you did to little, you know, tiny Tim or something. So that's one thing, is people just, again, like, not getting what movies are about. The second thing, and I've cropped up in my mind since watching the movie. This, to me, is just strikes so many of the same tones, beats, and plot twists as Promising Young Woman. Except for the fact they all deserved what they got.
Yeah, I was
there's
gonna
the
say,
difference.
Yeah,
but it's Promising one character.
Young Woman. Yeah,
it's one character going through all these motions, and we see it through the lens of a third person. And then when we get to the end, we see what actually happened.
Okay. All right. So Emerald Fennell has a style. Like, she's got a – but I don't know. That's – are you going to begrudge Steven Spielberg for making a movie about a guy who does a thing? Like, I don't know. I understand what you're saying, but they're not the same to me.
But, like, this is like, all right, so
her writing structure is the same. That's
kind of. So everyone, so people are now finally getting on, like, M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh,
for,
I see.
Like, we're every like movie has a twist.
Sure.
Like, every M. Night Shyamalan movie has a twist.
That's not true.
The difference
Avatar
here
didn't
is,
have a twist.
Huh?
That's the Avatar didn't have a twist.
It was called The Last Airbender.
Avatar, The Last Airbender. And it did
no,
not
I
have
thought
it.
No, they didn't have the name Avatar, was it?
Did they take out Avatar because?
Yeah, because of the other movie.
Oh, that's fascinating.
The better one.
No, that's true. The Last Airbender is an awful movie.
Yeah. In any event, I feel like this would be like M. Night Shyamalan if every twist was Bruce Willis is dead.
All right. You know, truthfully, we'll revisit this conversation in a couple years when she has a few more movies under her belt, and we'll see if she's doing the same. If she's doing the same shtick, or maybe that's her shtick. But this is to me a better movie. Promising Young Woman is a really good. It's well acted, it's well shot. It's got good themes. This one's got a lot of symbolism that Promising Young Woman doesn't have in the same way. I mean, it had some, like the place where she worked and the design work and everything. But this one is playing with just like, it plays with a lot of your preconceived notions about what you think these movies are about. And it twists them, you know, for the sake of irony. And I appreciated it by the end. I didn't love maybe the supervillain monologue at the end.
That wasn't a monologue, that was a dance scene.
I actually liked the dance scene. See, those are two things. I liked the dance scene quite a lot. Because it's like the entire movie is untruth, right? You know, like completely untruth, like from beginning to end. And he like tells you that. You know, like, this is how I did it, and got your little dog too. And so him dancing naked is like the truth unveiled. Like, you can't hide anything. It's the bare naked truth. That's the whole point of him dancing. He has nothing left to hide. There's nothing to be afraid of. There's like, that's the point of the naked dancing. I enjoy, like, from the symbolic standpoint, I really liked it. But I think it would have worked better if you spliced in like him dancing mixed in with like seeing what he did, so you understand like his process, instead of him being like, and here's my Scooby-Doo villain monologue and now this. It's just like, it was a minor quibble, but I didn't really think about it at the time. But no, I this movie's quite strong, and it is not for the faint of heart. It is not a movie that everybody should watch. It's not like I don't know, like a Schindler's List, like we said, where like, this, I don't care how difficult of watch this is an important movie and you should watch it. This is more like, this is good if you want to think in a particular, if you want to try thinking in a different way and really not being down to like anybody in a movie by any stretch of the imagination, because nobody is likable at all.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I couldn't say that. Maybe I wouldn't say that nobody is even likable. They're just not great people. That's like, I think the hard part about it, because like, I always like Richard E. Grant, like, even though he's not like the best of this, you know what I mean? He's not a great person. I always like Richard E. Grant, and I always like Rosamund Pike. So, anyway,
she was really good in this movie. Yeah, like, that's the one nice thing I can say about this movie.
There you go. I'll take it. I mean, even the title works for me, where it's like, salt is like this, like, it's just everywhere, right? You take it for granted. Tastes good, like, whatever. But salt burned, like, it's going to get you, too much of a good thing. Or, like, all of it's good. Like, and I liked, yeah, all, it was all good.
Except this movie.
It was great. What is your number three?
My number three is the only superhero movie on my list, and in a year of just some god awful superhero movies, looking at you, Flash, this was such a good, fun, lighthearted movie that knew what it wanted to do, struck the right tone, kept it consistent, made it fun.
Can I guess what your movie is before you get to the end? Yeah. Is it Blue Beetle?
No.
Is it Ninja Turtles?
God, no.
Okay, good. All right, now please continue.
It's The Marvels.
What?
Yes.
What?
This was such a fun movie and such a breath of fresh air from Marvel. I didn't really need to like watch 87 things, which I've gotten more and more.
That's true. I agree with
like,
that.
Like I've kind of, because I haven't watched anything since Avengers Infinity War or whatever it was.
Endgame. One that you pretended not to go with us to, but then it went anyway.
And so I felt like this feels tonally more like the start of the Marvel series, where it's a fun comic book movie that is just a comic book movie. Doesn't give you anything more than that. Anything you need to really know, you kind of get snippets of flashbacks in. You know, there was like maybe one or two questions that I had, but they were very minor and it didn't really matter in the end. I think the woman who plays Kamala Khan,
mm-hmm.
What's her name?
I don't know, you could look it up.
Ayman Valeni, perfect casting. I know there was a TV series with her as Ms. Marvel beforehand that people, you know, were saying the same things, like they thought she was great in it. I might go back and rewatch it. When I was watching the previews of it, it just didn't feel like it was for me, which is fine. Not everything has to be. It just didn't feel like something I wanted to watch. Just from some of like the stylistic choices of like the text being on the walls and that, I just felt like it was might have been a little bit too goofy for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
Brie Larson, I thought was really good. I don't typically like her. I've liked her as Captain Marvel. I even liked the last Captain Marvel. We have Samuel L. Jackson back as playing kind of like the straight man in all this, which is really fun. And we have, you know, we have a cat. Who doesn't love cats? And we have
a lot of people,
a song from
I
cats.
Love them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember, you know, I should have known this because you did text me and you're like, I think I just watched one of the greatest scenes I've watched all year. And it was the Marvels.
It was. Said that.
I liked it. I didn't have the strongest feeling. Like, people had very strong feelings about this movie. I did not have as strong feelings about it as they did. I thought it was an enjoyable 2 hours or however long it was. It didn't overstay its welcome. I thought,
yeah, that was the best part.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I didn't find the villain weak necessarily, just more like forgettable. But that's typical for Marvel
that's
movies.
Typical Marvel.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
typical Marvel. There are very few that are memorable.
It didn't try and redeem them.
No, like, it didn't.
It kind of does, but at the same time,
I felt like in some ways that like is like the. I don't like that the accountability for like people's actions were just kind of like passly. She's like, you know, kind of spoilers, but she's like, yeah, I'm the reason for like. All of this terrible stuff, and I'll just fix it. It's fine. No big deal. And I was like, just no kind of, there was no, I don't know, there was
really
like no
fault.
Consequence. There, it was literally her fault. She was like, this is my fault. I did this. Like,
yeah, but she wasn't trying to do it.
No, she wasn't, but she doesn't really own up to that until this. And I mean, all that's fine. It's just like, it just felt like, it was like a kind of sweep under the rug. We solved it kind of thing. And I think the whole, like, and Monica's whole, like, I got to close it from the inside thing. Like, why can't you close it from the outside? Like, why do you have to go inside?
Because you can't.
Yeah. There's no reason for that though.
Because being a hero means great sacrifice.
Yeah. There was
watch a Spider-Man movie.
I did. It's number six. And so
watch a good one.
Oh, it's number six. They were kind of like minor. It was felt like I have to close from the inside because we needed a mid-credit scene. Like that was like, but besides that, like I liked the musical planet. I liked the cat thing. Like some of it was just like, you're right. It was kind of just fun. And I mean, it's certainly in my list of movies that I watched this year.
Well, that's good.
Isn't it? Yeah. It actually have it positioned as last, but that's not right. Cause it was one of the last ones I actually did watch. So it's in there, but if you look at my what do you call it, Letterboxd list, that's not the correct order because it is better than that. But yeah,
all right.
My number three is The Holdovers.
Oh God,
You didn't like the holdovers?
No, we went over this.
No, I don't remember that conversation at all. The holdovers is great. No misses. It's typical. I don't think it does anything like, wow, I've never seen this in a movie before. It's, you know, curmudgeon-y teacher, like prep school, like, you know, we're at opposite ends, but we, you know, we learn to love each other kind of movie at the end. But I just thought that it, I thought they were just like really, I would say well thought out characters that not just the not just the kid in Paul Giamatti, but like everybody in the movie, or at least it's kind of its main, it, you know, its core, I would say like it's just its core cast of its core cast of people, you know, Divine Joy Randolph, Dominic Sessa, Paul Giamatti, like these, like they're kind of your trio, your, you know, your trio of characters, and they're all grieving in different ways. And I just liked the resolution of all of their different types of grief. Like in the end, like all you need is love. And that's kind of the main message of the movie here. And I just, I really liked it, but I don't want to say that I'm a sucker for movies about school, because that's not true. There's a lot of movies about school that are not good, but it has that, like, to me, it has that like Dead Poets Society, Good Will Hunting kind of vibe to it. And I will, the Emperor's Club, I will always like movies like that.
I didn't hate it. It was fine. I just felt like with a lot of Alex Payne's movies, while they're smart and funny and quirky, he just tends to make movies that feel like they just go on and on and on. Even if they don't, like even if they're only a half hour.
That's true. I did not find that with this one, though. And which
I felt it.
Which I have felt with other movies of his.
Yeah.
This is number 19 for you in your list for this year.
Is that how far down it is?
Apparently. I'm in your letterbox, and I didn't know that you can actually see. Oh no, you've watched 19 movies this year so far. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, no, I've watched 19 new movies so far this year. No, 19 was Little Mermaid. No,
that's actually my 19 too. That's hilarious.
Is it?
Yeah.
Every year I lock the current year's movies, so you can't actually find out what my movies are.
I assume. And I just trust the honors code and that you're not looking at mine, because I'm not doing that.
Yeah. All right. My number two, Netflix movie. Oh, this movie came out of nowhere. Julia Roberts, Mahershala Ali, called Leave the World Behind.
Oh, I never got to this. I heard the ending is weird, but the rest of it's great.
Maybe. So Julia Roberts plays a woman who has a family. They decide to, on a spontaneous whim, decide to go get a Airbnb out in kind of like the middle of nowhere.
They must be wealthy. Nobody spontaneously in the middle class can do that. Anyway,
I mean, this is true.
Yeah.
I think she lost her job, or she wants to quit her job or something.
Oh, yeah.
So they go out.
I lost my income. Let's spend a lot of money on a house that's not
theirs. They notice like the phone signal goes out or the TV goes out, and then all of a sudden this man and woman, this person and his daughter, who say they own the bed and the Airbnb, show up and say, hey, you know, we kind of got stuck. Can we stay for the night? As they're kind of slowly unraveling, trying to figure out what's going on, it heightens the tension between also you trying to figure out what's going on, because can you trust the people that who may or may not own this Airbnb? Is there a racial motivation going on why she doesn't trust them? It's very good, and I enjoyed the ending. I thought the ending might have been a little bit simplistic for what was going on, but I think it works perfectly.
It does sound like
as I want to see what else is going to happen.
It does seem like a movie that I would enjoy. I will put it
on
the list.
I think you really would.
I will put it on the list.
Yeah.
My number two, what are we on? Yeah, my number two. So I had a really hard time with one and two. I find them quite equal in my mind, but for completely different reasons. So I'm just going with what is in my list. And my number two is Barbie.
Okay.
I loved Barbie. It was amazing. I think a lot of people have talked about it ad infinitum. And so I don't know if I can really add to the conversation, except that it works as pure entertainment value and pure thematic value and symbolic value and like everything up. Like, it's just like, it is one of the most digestibly entertaining but thought provoking movies I've ever seen about something that I should not care about at all, but I in turn care very deeply. And so that's why it's my number two. Again, like, there's a couple of them in my top five. Like, there were no misses in this movie. Like, all of it was beautiful and fun and charming and said exactly what needed to be said. And anybody that does not feel that way did not get this movie and is no longer my friend, if you ever were. What do you think?
Good. I think my number one movie is Barbie.
Yeah, I figured.
It's just like, I'd been waiting for this movie for years. So I was probably already dispositioned to like it, but it was just like, this movie could have been so goofy and done over the top.
But it was perfect in that, like that, in that execution.
Everything worked. Like, the production design looking exactly like the toys, to even scenes where she looks very plastic. Mm-hmm. Like, she looks like she could be a doll, to like little jokes about like her feet being up on her tiptoes and like how you know something's wrong because like she now has fallen arches. I think everyone just does such a great job of all the different Barbies. You know, you have, you know, with all like the different versions of Barbie, Margot Robbie knocks it out of the park. My one minor complaint, I think, would be, like, I think Ryan Gosling might be, his Ken might be a little bit too much at times.
See, I liked the over-the-topness of Ken because you expect it to be Barbie in a Barbie world, but it's really Ken. And that's, I liked that very much. I also, the movie is like genuinely subtle at different times too, like in its over the topness. And like, so like the further Barbie is removed, I guess like original Barbie is like removed from her world, the more human she looks and becomes. And like, her hair isn't as done up, like the clothes that she wears. And like, by the end, she is a real person in a way that she's not at the beginning, but nobody ever talks about it that way. It's just like a natural, subtle change. And it's just like, it's just all good. Like, they're like, the phenomena of it is concerned, like, I just really loved seeing a movie with a lot of people in the theater that wasn't a Marvel movie. Like, you know, like the people like generally went to see a movie about something they thought they had given up in their lives, and it turns out they didn't. And I loved that. So if that's your number one, my number one is Oppenheimer.
I figured.
Yeah. And like, when I saw it, I said like, oh, maybe it's this, maybe it's Barbie, maybe it's this, maybe it's Barbie. And like, they're so different. They're very hard to compare. And it sits at number one as opposed to number two. I think in that, like, I saw it in IMAX, like, you know, with the right aspect ratio, like, and like all this stuff. So it was like, as far as like a viewing experience is concerned, like, I just like, it hits a few more markers on like the spectacle of movie making, like in going to the theater and all that stuff. And that, like, to no fault of Barbie's, it's just like, it's just different. And it, whereas I'd say like Maestro feels a little bit more by the numbers biography, Oppenheimer does not. and I liked the way that it's presented. In, I guess, in not just like you can get wrapped up in like the movie. The movie wraps you up into his world so much that you're like, you're not necessarily questioning the terribleness of the actions that like the bomb will bring until the bomb is tested, and the way that the starkness like of the sound, I guess, you know, like and everything like reminds you of the devastation without actually telling you anything, like kind of like Barbie or Saltburn, like it like lets you make your own conclusions, which is not something that you see very often in movies anymore, especially movies that are so big and popular. And I just, I really appreciate all of it. And there's just like great eye acting from Cillian Murphy in this entire time. Like, in just like, he's just like, is like finally in a lot of ways gets to like showcase how good of an actor he is. And also along with that, so did Josh Hartnett, which I just really appreciated how good he was in this movie. And I like it was like a half an hour. I'm like, why do I know you? Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's Josh Hartnett. Welcome back, my friend.
I mean, we'll get into this more because it's going to get nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, for sure.
I agree with the Cillian Murphy, and I think the acting wise, it's done really well, but there's some parts of it. Like, again, like I feel like it tries to redeem Oppenheimer a little bit too much for unfortunately what he did.
I think it's more that Oppenheimer tries to redeem himself, and that's kind of what you watch. I think there's a lot of ways a difference between like making something and pushing the button. You know, like is every person who like makes a hammer responsible for, I mean, that's not a bad example because a hammer isn't a weapon, but it can be, you know, like is every person that makes a rifle responsible for the way the rifle is used? If that rifle is a deer hunting rifle, and you know, and like hunting is actually like conservation, and like, and it's not just like the mass slaughter of animals. It's meant to be used in a very particular way. Now, I'm not saying it's a man who makes an AK-47 or something, like that's entirely different. But you understand what I mean?
To an extent, but I feel like where this is specifically a weapon engineered to kill lots of people very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's a harder line.
It is a harder. So I agree.
Like, and that's the thing, is like, I don't feel like there's really a lot of things to kind of compare it to. That being said, my other thing that I kind of take away from this movie is I'm a little over Christopher Nolan's sound mixing style.
Oh, you mean very loud and very quiet all at the same time?
Well, I was going to say the very loud going over, like, trying to hear people talk.
Mm-hmm. I did not experience that in this movie the way that I have in his other ones as the years go on. Maybe that's because it was maybe because it was IMAX. Maybe it was, I don't know, something else. But I just, I'm with you on that one. But I haven't loved his movies over the past couple of years. Like, I find some of them to be like a little overrated, or
what was his last one?
Tenet was his last one before this, and before that was Dunkirk.
I liked Dunkirk.
Yeah, and I didn't really care for, like, yeah, it was fine. I didn't care for Dunkirk. I didn't even bother to see Tenet. But Inception is good, but it's overrated. Dark Knight Rises is not a great wrap up to that trilogy. It's like, it's fine. It's like does a lot of good things and does a lot of questionable things. And so, like, I just really appreciated his, like, not to say back to form, but like I thought it was his best film since The Dark Knight. Or actually, no, lies. His best film since Interstellar, because he did Interstellar after The Dark Knight, I think. And that I just needed to, I think, see that as somebody who's like, I can't say I've seen everybody's filmography, but I've actually seen all of his. So, almost like
yeah, I think I have too.
Though I've also seen all of Greta Gerwig's. So there you go. And back
have you?
Yeah, she's only directed three movies, so it's a little easier.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, maybe four. Actually, now that I say that out loud, I'm going to check that right now. Yep, Barbie, Lady Bird, Little Women, Nights and Weekends.
I haven't seen Nights and Weekends.
2008, a man and woman face the tension that builds between them during a long-distance relationship.
Hmm.
How about that? Anyway, yeah. Palmer, we did it, everybody. We did our top 10 of the year. You can find us online on Twitter at Academy Rewind. X has been that long since we've recorded a podcast. You can find us on X at Academy Rewind. You can also email us at academyrewind@gmail.com, but don't, because we don't check. And that it truly is years going. I don't know what the password is anymore. And I know you can click the little button that says forgot password, but I'm not going to. And that's about it from us. We'll be back for the Oscars at the very most. We'll be back for the Oscars.
Yes, we will. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely be back for the Oscars. Hopefully we'll have Lisa back. She unfortunately had to miss this time around. And she actually messaged us while we were recording saying she failed us. And I tried to make her feel bad by saying because of that, I had to talk about the salt burn.
You would have had to talk about it anyway, because it would have been.
Yeah, because I think it would have been on her list, too.
It would have been.
Which is what the great taste. Which is what the downside is. And Christopher Nolan, I haven't seen Following. So I'm going to watch that this week just so I can
You can say that you've seen it all. I agree.
Yep.
All right, my friends. Right. Well, we are out of here, which is great because they're playing us off.
I have some real people to thank.
Well, too bad. Bye.
Bye.